remind you guys what we did last time. So the dimension is 2. Well, then there's a map from S2, S plus to V, and also from S2, S minus to V. And if I have N comma M supersymmetry, this means I have S plus, N copies of S plus, and M copies of S minus. And the OR symmetry group in this case is S O N times S O M, acting on these auxiliary spaces there. In dimension 3, we have a single irreducible spin representation, dimension 2, and then there's a map from this guy to the vector representation. And if I have N extended supersymmetry, then I will have S tensor C to the N as my, this table is the fermionic part of my supersymmetry algebra. And the OR symmetry group will be SON. Dimension 4, we have S plus tensor S minus. Actually, this map is an isomorphism. This is equal to V. And again, if I have N extended supersymmetry, then I will have S plus tensor CN plus S minus tensor, a dual copy of CN. And then the OR symmetry group here is GLN. So today I just want to fill in a bit of the rest of the table. So dimension 5, and what's fun is you can use exceptional isomorphisms of Lie groups in the first couple of dimensions like we've been doing. So in dimension 5, spin 5 is SP4. And then this spin representation, which is C4, is equal to the fundamental representation of SP4C. The vector representation is, well, I can take the second exterior square. This is dimension 6. But it has, by definition, it has an SP4 invariant element in it, namely the symplectic form. So I divide it by C times omega. Omega is equal to the symplectic form. OK, so we conclude that the vector representation lives inside the exterior square of the spin representation. V side which 2 of S. And to have, if we have N extended supersymmetries, recall that when it lives in the exterior square, we need to tensor it with a symplectic vector space to make the Lie bracket between the supersymmetries symmetric. So this means we need to take S tensor C to the 2N. Where C to the 2n is symplectic. And in this case, the OR symmetry group is SP2nc. Okay, so you see from here that the smallest number of supersymmetries you can have in 5 dimensions in a supersymmetry algebra is 8. And if you know physics, this is also the smallest number of supersymmetries you can have in a field theory. So it's compatible. So let's see dimension 6. the isomorphism we're going to use now is that spin 6C is equal to SL4C. And again, the spin representation is C4, it's the fundamental representation. The vector representation is the exterior square of S. We can check that this is six-dimensional. So 4 times 2 is 6. And notice also, something that applies in this case and in this case, you want the vector representation to have a metric. You want this vector, this representation to define a homomorphism to SO6. So you want to have some symmetric pairing on here, and you do, because I can take two guys in here, wedge them together to get an element of wedge 4 of S, and that's trivial because this is SL4. So I can use that to construct a pairing on this space. And you can, of course, the symplectic form is a vector of norm 1, which makes sense because we can, you know, we reduce to 5 dimensions, we get rid of a vector of norm 1. Okay, sorry, this should have been S plus. My mistake. S plus is C4, and S minus is the dual of S plus. SL4C has two four-dimensional representations, and V is also equal to wedge 2 of S minus. Okay, so we can have with N comma M extended supersymmetry. In this case, we're allowed to have N M extended supersymmetry because the vector representation can be built from a bunch of copies of S plus or a bunch of copies of S minus, so it's okay to have a different number of them. We will have S plus tensor C to the 2N plus S minus tensor C to the 2M. And then the orthosymmetry is SP2NC times SP2M. Okay. Again, because the vector is in the exterior square, these need to be symplectic, which is why the orthosymmetry needs to be the symplectic group. So we see that, for example, the smallest amount of supersymmetry, 1, 0, supersymmetry, we'll have S plus tensor C2. So what that is, we'll have 8 supercharges. People are not too bored by all this algebra, but the reason I'm going through this in such detail is that my feeling is if you really want to understand supersymmetric field theory well, you really have to have this. You have to understand supersymmetries in various dimensions, you know, in your bones without having to think about it. Let's see. Let me mention one nice feature you see in this example. Before moving on to discussing the remaining couple of dimensions quickly, it's believed that an M5 grain in 11 dimensions has 2,0 supersymmetry. This is a six-dimensional object, so it should provide a field theory with 2,0 symmetry, supersymmetry like we wrote here. And one trivial observation is that, well, in any brain construction, rotation of the normal directions will be realized by orthosymmetry. So this is always true. So since the normal directions, there's five normal directions you expect to have SO5 or symmetry, or maybe SP5. Sorry, spin 5. So we expect to have spin 5, C, or symmetry. Well, we do, because if you look at what we found, if n is 2 and m is 0, the OR symmetry is SP4, which is spin 5. And this is also, this is equal to spin 5C. And if one thinks about, if you know anything about brain constructions, you'll see in every example we've discussed which has a brain realization, the OR symmetry wrote down will be realized by rotations in the normal direction.
There's some conceptual reason for that, or do you case by case?
I mean, conceptually, it's clear that the rotations in the normal direction will give you some subgroup of the OR symmetry group. But it appears in all examples that it gives you the whole thing. Maybe the example is 4-dimensional n equals 4, where you have, it should be SL3 instead of, sorry, SL4, because SL4 is spin 6. So beyond dimension 6, we can't use exceptional isomorphisms of Lie groups anymore. But you can still continue our table, and D equals 7. We have a spin representation S, and the vector representation is inside of wedge 2 of S. This is an 8-dimensional representation. If we have n extended supersymmetry, we'll have S tensor C to the 2n, and the OR symmetry is going to be will be SB2n. In dimension 8, again, we have S plus and S minus. These are both 8-dimensional. Actually, this is a fun case because SO8 has an outer automorphism given by triality, if you look at his Dinkin diagram. Rotating this Dinkin diagram rotates the vector representation and these three representations cyclically. The vector representation is inside of S plus tensor S minus. That's the only thing compatible with triality. So N extended supersymmetry, we will have S plus tensor CN plus S minus tensor CN joule, and then the OR symmetry is GLN, just like in the 4-dimensional case. I'll skip dimension 9. Let's write down dimension 10. And we have S, spin representation, S plus, S minus, they're both of dimension 16. The vector representation is in S2, S plus, and also in S2, S minus. So this is the situation where you can have different numbers of spinners of opposite chiralities. So we can have N, M, supersymmetry, we can take S plus tensor Cn plus S minus tensor Cm. Because it's in the symmetric part, these need to have a symmetric inner product so that the orthosymmetry is SLn times SOm. So the smallest number of supersymmetries you can have, the 10-dimensional example is interesting because it corresponds to string theory. So for example, like kind of 1, 0, this will be 10-dimensional super Young Mills. 2, 0 will be the type 2B string. One, the 2A. Okay. Great, so I hope everybody is can kind of reconstruct the definitions of supersymmetry algebras in various dimensions. So, any questions? So what I wanted to do next was, well, so this was the easy part. So the hard part about understanding supersymmetric field theories is that writing down the various Lagrangians and checking they're supersymmetric is a huge mess. I didn't want to get into that too much. What I was going to do instead was study twists of these theories, which you can write down much more explicitly. But wouldn't be fair not to give you some flavor of how to write down the supersymmetric Lagrangians. So I'll do that in some special cases, and we'll do a little bit of the checking that they're supersymmetric, even though it gets a bit messy. So what happens is the following. So in dimensions, D equals 4, 6, and 10, there exists a supersymmetric gauge theory with minimal supersymmetry, namely in dimension n equals 1, in 4D, 1, 0, in 6D, 1, 0, in 10D. And what makes these guys special? I mean, there also exists a gauge theory with minimal supersymmetry in 5 dimensions or 3 dimensions. But what's special about these dimensions is that these are in some way primitive, that the only fields they have are a connection and a spinner. They don't have any, in other dimensions, you have some scalar field as well. So in this case, the only fields are a connection, A, which is a one form, and to the D, coefficients in symmetry algebra, and a spinner psi, which is a section of the appropriate spin bundle. So you might ask, which spin bundle do you use? The answer is, the spin bundle you use is, tensor with G. The spin bundle you use is exactly the same one that appears in the supersymmetry algebra. So where in dimensions D equals 4, this S means the one S plus plus S minus. and D equals 6. S is just S plus, and D equals 10. S plus. So your spinners live in whatever the fermionic part of your supersymmetry algebra is. But you can notice that there's a kind of a coincidence in that the whole thing can be written as a, both fields can be written as a section of a bundle whose fiber is the supersymmetry algebra tensor with G, because this is equivalent to a section of the tangent bundle, if you want. So the action is the integral f u Yang-Mills action, the integral psi for the Dirac operator, which maps from sections of S plus to sections of S minus. So this is given by the formula. For any bundle on a Riemannian manifold, I can take the covariant derivative. And that gives me takes a section of a bundle and turns it into a section of a one form valued in that bundle. Now, fiber wise, I can perform Clifford multiplication. I can take an element of this fiber, an element of here, and Clifford multiply them. Where this is the bundle map given by a Clifford multiplication. Okay, so you can check in each case. For example, in dimension 4, this term will pair a positive chirality spinner with a negative chirality spinner. Yeah?
You mean that operator paired with A, right? This psi is with A.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you want that. So, yeah, so you take the covariant derivative with the term coming from that connection. Sorry, here right now I have to test it with G everywhere. Okay, so, sorry the formula got a bit messy, but does this make sense? Okay. Yeah, so here we'll pair S plus with S minus, because there's an invariant pairing on S plus with itself, because it's in a symplectic representation of spin 4. And in dimension 6, you only have S plus, but the positive spinners and the negative spinners are dual. If you look at, I think I just erased that, but the two spin representations of spin 6 were dual. So this formula still makes sense in 6 dimensions, and it also makes sense in 10 dimensions, because again, we didn't write it down in 10 dimensions, but it does make sense. Okay. So I want to write down an action of this supersymmetry algebra on this space of fields. Let's work locally, so let's just work in a flat space. And with the following simplifications, we'll work in a flat space. And in a minute, I'll make things abelian, just to simplify everything. So if I take Q, which is a spinner, and again, we're working dimensions 4, 6, or 10, and it's in one of those spin representations, we can define a symmetry, an infinitesimal symmetry of the space of fields by sending a field that consists of A, comma psi. This will map to A plus epsilon gamma Q psi. Well, gamma is our map, which takes two spinners and produces a vector. So here I've taken two spinners and produced a vector. I'm implicitly turning it into a one form. And psi plus epsilon FA dot Q. So let me explain these terms. So gamma Q psi is a section of the tangent bundle of order D tensor G. So we view that as a one form. That's what gamma is. What do I mean by this? Well, in general, FA is a two form. Coefficients in G. Now we saw that we can embed locally in a local frame, we can embed the exterior square of the vector representation inside the Clifford algebra. So wedge 2 or to the D is inside the Clifford algebra of or to the D, and it's a copy of SOD, silly algebra. So this means, while we've talked about Clifford multiplication by vectors or one forms, we can also Clifford multiply by a two form. That just amounts to applying some rotation in SOD. So this thing, this is Clifford multiplication, fiberwise. If you like, it's also the same as a rotation. Like we think of the two form as being an element of SOD, and then you use that to rotate the spinner. Okay, how confused is everybody? I mean, trying to do this without writing down pages of indices is a... So the general claim people make is that in these dimensions, in dimensions d equals 4, 6, d, over 6, 10. So firstly, this action, this infinitesimal symmetry, preserves the action function. Secondly, that it really defines an action of the Lie algebra, that the commutator, here we've written down some vector field on this infinite-dimensional space, the commutator of these two of these vector fields is Lie derivative of the spectral translation. So VQ is equal to the vector field on the space of fields, associated to Q, then VQ prime is equal to the Lie derivative with respect to gamma. That's a Q prime. Here, just there. But this claim is not true as written. It requires some qualification. The qualification is that this only holds modulo gauge symmetry. And on the solutions of the equations of motion. So if you look at any textbook about supersymmetry, they get to this part pretty easily, and then they work very, very hard to find a formulation which holds without these caveats. And that's where a lot of the work is. We're going to ignore that. So what does it mean, modulo gauge symmetry? So we've seen for every spinner, the constant spinner on order to the d, we get this vector field on the space of the pair, space of pairs a, psi. And this is a formula for the vector field. Since this vector field preserves the action functional, it will be tangent to the subspace given by the solutions of the equations of motion. So it'll give me a vector field there. And it also commutes with the gauge symmetry, which I forgot to say. Well, that's evident. Since it also commutes with the gauge symmetry, it will give me some vector field on the quotient of the equations of motion by gauge symmetry. We're saying on that quotient space, this will these relations will hold. Okay. Any questions? Yeah.
So gauge symmetry means spin BC.
No, sorry. So the gauge symmetry, we have a connection, which is a one-form valued in some Lie algebra. The gauge symmetry is by a map to the Lie, map from order the d to that Lie group, which acts on the connection by the usual formula.
So, okay. Sorry. What was the Lie group? Is anything and g is.
G is the Lie algebra of that Lie group. Sorry, I wasn't clear. So yeah, it's not spin D. That's... Okay, so as I said, this is a huge pain to go through all the details. Yeah?
So this is a silly question. Mm. So the Lie derivative of some vector, like that's a vector, right?
It's a vector field on the symmetric space, yes. On an infinite-dimensional space consisting of pairs A, psi.
Right. And that's how the that's how a vector would act, like as I respect a vector to act.
Oh, this expression here?
Yeah.
Oh, I think bad terminology. I meant this is some translation in order to the D. And the group of translations clearly acts in the space of pairs A, psi, because that's a symmetry of preserves the metric. So infinitesimally, it also gives some vector field on that space. So this was some, the action of this vector field. So we're saying these two fermionic vector fields commute to the bosonic vector field, which exponentiates to translation. So if you do this in a different dimension, I don't understand it in great detail, but for example, suppose you wanted to do dimension 3. What you could do is you could take what you have in dimension 4 and, hold on, am I getting this wrong? I think 3 might be one of the admissible dimensions too, sorry. But I forgot to talk about it. I mean, these admissible dimensions are related to the exceptional or C quaternions and octonions, that those dimensions plus 2. So there's some algebra like that going on. So suppose you were in dimension 5. Then you would say, how would I construct such a thing? Well, one way to do would be to do what you know you can do in dimension 6, and then reduce along a circle, which is another way to say that is do what you can do in dimension 6 and then make all the fields independent of the sixth direction. Now, if you make the fields independent of the sixth direction, then the component of the connection in that direction, well, that's invariant under SO5. So that component of the connection will now be a scalar in 5 dimensions. So this argument will tell you that in 5 dimensions, you can find a theory with the right amount of supersymmetry, which has an extra field consisting of a scalar, the scalar corresponding to the connection in the extra direction. And that's the best you can do. If you want to have supersymmetry, you have to have that scalar, because some of the spinners are transformed or mixed with that scalar.
Actually, that wasn't my question.
Oh, sorry.
You're in flat space. I mean, if you're on a manifold.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So yeah, if you're on a manifold M, so if M is a manifold, it's more subtle. You can look at the spinners you want to use. I can take inside my space of spinners, I have the covariant constant spinners. And inside of my space of vectors, I have the covariant constant vectors. So these things will form some smaller supersymmetry algebra. I mean, basically, these things together are just covariant constant sections of the. You take your supersymmetry algebra; it's acted on by spin D, which means you can form a bundle of them on any manifold. You take the covariant constant sections of that bundle of Lie algebras; you get some Lie algebra. That will be the symmetries you'll find.
That could be very small.
It could be very small. It will typically be zero. I mean, for instance, being covariant constant, the vector field is much stronger than being a Killing vector field. There are ways to make it bigger by doing fancy things with supergravity, but there was ways to modify these equations and modify the theory and so on and so on. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so I'd like to just check a few things about the statement. What should I check? Maybe the first thing I want to check is that in dimension 4, the commutation relations of the supersymmetry algebra. Suppose t equals 4. Let's check. So I'm going to simplify my life by assuming that G is OR, which is abelian. So then my space of fields is now some vector space. So the space of fields is now linear. A linear superspace. And the supersymmetry algebra acts by linear transformations. So what does it look like? The space of fields consists of a one form. And sections of S plus plus S minus. So the supersymmetry acts by saying if I take, say, Q plus, I'm going to take a connection here. And it will send it to dA clipper multiply q plus, come out dA clipper multiply q minus. So here q plus q minus s plus plus s minus. And on the other hand, I get a map going the other way. I produce a one form, namely I take my psi plus and psi minus and I combine the psi plus part with q minus to get a one form and the psi minus part with q plus to get a one form. And I want to check that if I go this way, what I do is I've differentiated my connection. So in this case, the only interesting commutation relations are between q plus and q minus, because the vector representation is the tensor product of S plus and S minus. So Q plus will commute, any two positive chirality guys will commute, any two negative chirality guys will commute. So we'll just compute the commutation relation between an element of Q plus, between Q plus and Q minus. We'll see. So we'll compute this commutator, q plus, q minus, and see how it acts on a connection. So what we do, we send A gets sent to, if we do things in one way, A gets sent to dA dot q plus, and this gets sent to gamma q minus tensor dA dot q plus. If we do things the other way, this is the action of q minus q plus, the action of q plus q minus. A gets sent to dA dot q minus. gets into gamma q plus tensor b dot q minus. Okay. And so we're doing the supercommutator. We want the sum of these guys, some brackets there, the sum of these guys to be equal to the derivative of my connection A. So, well, the thing we're going to use is the fact that this map gamma is invariant under SO4. And this Clifford multiplication here by dA, that's just an element of SO4 fiberwise, with some coefficient which is a function. So I can take, so I can apply this on the other side, and I'll get a formula. So the action of dA to gamma q plus tensor q minus is equal to gamma dA dot q plus gamma over here, we found the supercommutator we wanted. So we find that the supercommutator, q plus q minus, is equal to the action, this element of SO4, times gamma q plus tensor q minus. Now, there aren't that many ways to take a two-form and a vector and produce a vector. One way is to take your two-form, think of it as an element of SO4, and then use that to rotate the vector. Another way is to take my vector and contract it with the two-form, produce a one-form. Well, they're the same. So this is equal to the contraction contracted with dA. Now, the final step is to use Cartan's homotopy formula. I think Cartan's formula tells us that if I want to apply the Lie derivative to some one form, that's obtained by the commutator of contraction with the exterior derivative. So this is the same as the Lie derivative tensor q minus A plus D of the contraction okay, now we're done because this is a gauge transformation. We found it. The commutation relation holds up to a gauge transformation. Raised in the wrong place. Sorry. Okay, so we've just like verified explicitly using just by doing it that they commute to the Lie derivative. Now, the statement about spinners. That you know, if I try to do the same thing, but I start with a spinner, turning it into a connection and bringing it back to a spinner, seeing that I get differentiation, that's just a bit more painful to do. And I think it's at that point you need some identities relating this map gamma and Clifford multiplication. I think they're called Fiertz identities. So you need these identities to check that the relations hold, which is why it only holds in these special dimensions. So I won't go through that one because it's a bit of a pain. Bit of a pain being shorthand for I probably couldn't do it on the board. Okay, any questions about this? Okay, so well, I think next time we'll start talking about twisting. But so today we understand the basic examples. Now you can say, as an example of what we kind of figured out. So, what's the field content of n equals 4 super Yang mills? N equals 4 super Yang mills in d equals 4. And what are its linearized supersymmetry transformations? So this is a question we now we've discussed enough for you guys to be able to answer this. Now the answer is, well, the start of the answer is that it's n equals 4, d equals 4 is reduced, dimensionally reduced, from 1, 0 in 10 dimensions. So the field content consists of a connection. Everything is adjunct valued, so I'm going to write it down. And 6 scalars. So A, 40, which are related by saying that the 10-dimensional connection is a 4-dimensional connection plus some dx. Now these 6 scalars are just the remaining 6 components, the 10-dimensional connection. And well, in 10 dimensions, how many spinners we had? Well, we had 16 spinners in 10 dimensions because we saw that there were 16 spinners in the 1, 0 supersymmetry algebra in 10 dimensions. So in 10D, we have 16 spinners. In S plus 10D. And so this 10-dimensional guy decomposes under the action of say spin 4 times spin 6. So it's S plus 4D. And another fun fact, which is useful in dimensional reduction, is how these representations decompose, and it's always in a very simple way. The 10-dimensional spinners are a tensor product of the 4D guys, S plus 6D. And whether it's positive or negative chirality in 10 dimensions is whether these are the same or opposite. So I get S minus 4D tensor S minus 6D. Now, we also saw that the 6-dimensional spin representation, this is SL4, so this is the fundamental and this is the anti-fundamental representation of SL4. So we find the expected form. W star Okay, so we've deduced that the four-dimensional field content is a connection, six scalars, and S plus tensor fundamental representation of SL4, SL4, S minus tensor the anti-fundamental representation of SL4. And SL4 is the order symmetry group. And you can also deduce from this what the supersymmetry transformations are. For example, if I take a generator of supersymmetry, we wrote down the formula for it. There's going to be an expression involving the derivative of this to form something in SO10 acting on that supersymmetry and producing something here. So that will give us transformations which take a scalar to a spinner. And they will be some of the supersymmetry transformations. And you can try to compute them if you want to. I think it will actually be a fun exercise. Yeah. If you really want to get on top of stuff. Get the linearized supersymmetry transformations. Okay, stop there.